say that, first of all, I wanted to share some of the background. And secondly, I'm going to give you some of the details of history that occurred in the early pioneer days of Lutheran ministry, particularly Western Canada. And then I'm going to have some sort of summary observations about what it takes to be a pioneer missionary. I should first begin by indicating my interest in this whole area. I think some, if not most of you, know that I've been teaching at Concordia College in Edmonton, Alberta, for the last 8 years, and I'm on sabbatical leave. And therefore, I have a natural interest in Lutheran Church History Canada style, and also in the pioneer missionary work that was done there. I should say that very little has been done in the way of writing in the area. Some work has been done, of course, by Alfred Ray Winkle, who at one time been a professor here at the seminary. Albert Schwerman had left some work, some memoirs and reminiscences from the early days. More recently, Norman Trinan, who is now teaching in church history at our seminary in Edmonton. He's done some extensive work, but there is a great deal more research that still has to be done, and a lot of details that have never been recorded. I also want to be able to teach a course in that area at Concordia in Edmonton. To date, we don't have a single course for Canadian students to grow in appreciation of their heritages as Lutherans, the support that they have received from the Missouri Synod over the years, and of their own history as Lutherans in Canada. So that's the second reason why I'm interested. And thirdly, I want to render a correction to most of the work that has been done over time by Canadian church historians, most of whom have virtually neglected what has been done among Lutherans in Canada from the earliest days. I'm reminded recently I picked up a book called Winning the Frontier, which is a book that purports to give the work of missionaries and church people in the Canadian West in the early days among all the denominations, and mention the book Winning the Frontier as the work of Roman Catholics, the work of Anglicans, the work of the United Church, Presbyterians, even Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witness, but not a single mention about Lutherans. And that is a bias among Canadian historians, I think, that has particularly existed since the First World War. Part of it is the anti-German feeling among some of the historians. So I can't wait to get on record and to give some contribution for the whole vision of Canadian church history as it has been developing up north there. So, first some visuals. This is Canada as we know it today. There is an error on this map. Can anybody pick it up? Where is it? Well, it came from this library. I think it's a stateside historian who decided that this territory picked up by the United States in 1867 from the Russians is the Yukon territory of Canada. If you can just move this word to here, you've got the Yukon right. And this is Nova Scotia. And this is New Brunswick. And Prince Edward Island and so forth. They just didn't put everything in there. We'll change that to Alaska. Put the Yukon there. Okay? Now, that's as it is now. It's an immense territory, more immense than I had ever imagined before I came to Canada in 1990. So like I was one of the pioneer missionaries. Actually, British Columbia is as large as Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas combined. So if you notice in the book of the statistical yearbook in Missouri Synod, normally they show the districts and they cut off this much, they have this much of Canada and all the other districts in the states, and you don't get a vision of how larger territory. Ontario, geographically, is a very large region. Now, just to give you an indication of how the work was developed by the Missouri Synod in Canada, you can see that basically you have a separate development between East and West and how the mission work began in the Canadian region. In the eastern part, Canada was served by the northern district, eastern segment out of Michigan, but also from the eastern district and even central district, Ohio, coming up to Niagara Falls. But basically, it is considered that the Canada district, which was begun in 1839, came out of the northern district and continued to be called the Canada district all the way up to 1923, when it then became known as the Ontario district. Ontario had a they had decided that they ought to give way in their name because at that time already Alberta, British Columbia, and Manitoba, Saskatchewan districts had been formed, and to be presumptuous to continue part of the Canada district, when in fact you're only dealing with Ontario. There was also in the English district some work in Canada, only in Ontario, and only 8 congregations, and only 2. One went back to 1861 in Mitchell. One in Pembroke around the 1890s, and then only in the mid-20th century, there were 6 more congregations, only 8 congregations in the English district in Canada, and only in Ontario. For the most part, where my interest lies is in the West, as I talk today, and basically the work there comes out of northern and out of northwestern districts in the late 1879. 1879 begins at that point, then through Minnesota, Dakota, and then through the Minnesota district, until finally you have the formation of these 2 districts, Alberta, British Columbia, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. There's still a little bit of Canada being served by Minnesota North. Just above Lake Superior, Thunder Bay, there are about 17 congregations today that are actually being served from stateside Minnesota North. Okay. But that does give you a bit of a vision of the difference that exists even today between West and East, separate development of mission work. Back in the latter part of the 19th century, this was what the map of Canada looked like. What became known as Saskatchewan was then known as the District of Saskatchewan and the District of Assiniboia. Now, even to today, Missouri Synod congregations recall the days when they were part of the Assiniboia district, because in southeast Saskatchewan, or the Manitoba Saskatchewan district, you find a circuit called the Assiniboia Circuit. And these are the congregations that began back in the days when it wasn't called Saskatchewan, but it was called Assiniboia. I'm just going to leave that up there for point of reference as I talk, okay? Now, I mentioned to you that Eastern Canada had a separate development. It really goes back all the way to 1854. Eastern Canada was first served by the Missouri Synod by Johann Adam Ernst. This is the significant Ernst, who was the first note helper for lay, became one of the first 2 laymen to come to the United States in 1841. And he, Lochner, and Seeler had met with Walter in 1845 and began the foundation of the Missouri Synod. It's this Ernst who in 1854 begins to work in Ontario. Comes up from his parish in Eden, New York, and begins working in Elmira, Fisherville, Delhi, in this area here. In 1863, he comes back up and takes a parish in Elmira, Ontario, and begins the work of Missouri Synod in the East. By 1871, he began the first district newspaper ever begun in the Missouri Synod. It was called the Lutherische Volksblatt. And in 1879, Ernst became the first district president of the Canada District, as it was known in that day. Now in the West, there was a settlement in Oshawa. If you can imagine, this is Winnipeg, the center of the capital of Manitoba in time. 40 miles west is a little settlement called Oshawa. In the 1870s, they began asking in the East for a pastor to come to minister to them. Nobody could come. They asked the Missouri Senate representatives in the East, no response. They asked the General Council, no response. Part of the problem was that the Canadian Transcontinental Railroad, the Canadian Pacific, had not come through yet. So there wasn't an easy way really to come from the East at that time. So they waited. In 1878, the first railroad reaches Winnipeg, and it comes from St. Paul, Minnesota, before the Canadian Pacific had come from the East. So then, they felt they had a tie-in from some Lutherans that had pastors somewhere. So then they sent a letter in 1879 early to Carl Strawson, who was the president of the Northwestern District. Then he was located in Watertown, Wisconsin. And he asked them, they asked him for a pastor. And as a response, Pentecost, May 31st, 1879, a pastor by the name of Ernst Rolfe comes up from St. Paul, Minnesota. Takes the train up to Winnipeg and begins serving Oshawa. He stayed there for 2-3 weeks. He had 4 worship services. He administered communion to the little settlement. And they were so grateful. People were very grateful to have a pastor. An aged old man, as reported, said that when Rolf came up, he said, "I can die happy now that I have. My fervent prayers have been answered, and I have again heard a Lutheran sermon and received the Lord's Supper." The gratitude continued. The missionaries, even in the U.S. at that time, had a tremendous amount of work, places to go to. They could only manage to come up to Oshawa once a year between 1879 and 1887. For a period of 8 years, each year at least one pastor came up. In 1880, in the spring, Johannes Kruger came up from Elizabeth, Minnesota, mainly from Elizabeth because it was closer than St. Paul. It was close to the border. So he came up. And then came, each year, other pastors. There was a pastor named Gretsch, Charles Engel, and Detzer. They came up once a year. But no one could come to stay. Kruger later remarked that if we could have stationed the pastor there then, we could have had the key to all subsequent settlements in the Canadian West. But it wasn't to be. In the 1880s, there began to be a dry period. Severe drought, hit particularly the Oshawa area. People began to move away to seek farming land elsewhere. And then finally, in 1887, the committee itself collapsed, dissolved, and with it the Missouri Synod ministry in the Canadian West. There was only one family left, the Charles Neumann family, that continued to persevere in the faith. The elder Neumann continued to have prayer and reading services with his family. Years later, some of them moved to Pincher Creek, Alberta, and began to form what became the Lutheran congregations in that area in 1899. I have a lot of respect for these people who continued in the faith, whether they could have a pastor there or not. But Oshawa virtually vanished. I mean, literally did. In time, there were only Well, there were some roads, and then they vanished. The buildings vanished. Today, the only thing that is left of Oshawa is the foundation of a community milk house in a gravel pit. And that's what's left of that community and the working jury tenant up to 1887. Meanwhile, tremendous growth is taking place in the Canadian West. Thousands and thousands of people each month are coming in now. Canada had its own version of the Homestead Act, so that people were given 160 acres of land as a homestead for free, as long as they could get in there and work it. And so, during this period, they began to come to settle in Manitoba, what is now Saskatchewan, southern Alberta, seeking land and a place of their own. Winnipeg was the key city. It had really grown. In 1873, it only had a population of 1,900. In 1884, 11 years later, it had a population of 16,694. And its population doubled within 10 more years. And Manitoba itself grew from a population of 25,000 to 150,000 in a matter of a decade. And also to the west, immigrants were coming. Among the immigrants were German-speaking Lutherans in great numbers, significant numbers, and they were especially coming from Austria, Hungary, southern Russia, not as many from Germany itself as was the case in the United States in early migration. These are Eastern, more Eastern Europeans, and Austria-Hungary. Also some from Ontario, and also from North Dakota, and Minnesota, and parts of the state are coming up for homestead at this time. Missouri Synod at the time had no master strategy or plan for serving the area, and it would have been nice if they had, but they didn't. Their concern at the time seemed to be to serve people who requested help at particular locations, and so Oshawa had been a particular location. Pastors had come up. They had to pass through Winnipeg. They had to see the busyness of a growing community and city. The immigrant population was coming in by thousands, but they didn't notice it. They simply had to get to Oshawa, and they had to get back. Later, Alfred Raywinkle, pioneer missionary, commented on this, and he said he wished they had opened something like the Pillar House that had been in New York to try to channel the immigrants to locations and to try to help serve the Missouri Synod to serve them, but it wasn't to be. Now, a real interesting development, and a difficult one for us as it turns out, took place in 1889. This is now a year and a half after we have stopped our work in Manitoba, and nothing is going on. Some Lutherans in Winnipeg wanted a pastor. Finally, the president of the Canada Synod of the General Council came to Winnipeg, and he began a congregation there, a Trinity congregation, in 1889. The following spring, Heinrich Schmieder came to serve the congregation in Winnipeg of the General Council and began to work and develop the mission field for the General Council Lutherans. In time, he went and organized a congregation in Langenberg, in southeast Saskatchewan. He also went as far as Aidenwald, right by Regina, started a congregation there. He had 5 to 7 preaching stations in southern Manitoba, and he really got to work and began to develop ministry among German-speaking Lutherans. He moved to Aidenwald in 1890, and then came Ludwig Streich to serve in Winnipeg, another general council pastor. And he began to develop the work in Winnipeg. And so it was that you had a general counsel beginning work there. As far as they knew, as far as I can tell, they hadn't even known that the Missouri Synod had ever been in the Canadian West. And this becomes a factor in time, in fact, even an arguing point. Strike, the new pastor in Winnipeg, this is after Schmieder went to Ingwall. Strike comes in. He, like Schmieder, is an experienced pastor, but also a pretty quarrelsome individual. In time, he's really belligerent. When Missouri men begin to work in the Canadian West, he tries to block every possible, in every possible way the work is being done there. He even creates problems for his own mission board. So Strike is going to be an interesting personality in the story. One other comment. In southeast Alberta, Dunmore, a community of Lutherans is formed, and that community asks for a pastor, and they get Ferdinand Tempite, who comes from the mission house in Berlin. He's a new to the ministry, and he begins to serve the Lutherans at Dunmore. All this is taking place in a relatively short period of time, basically between 1889, 1891, early part. And that's how it was. Tempite was in Dunmore, Schmieder's in Edenwald, Strike in Winnipeg, when Herman Brauer came to Canada. Now the plot thickens. Who was Herman Brauer? He was sent by the mission board of the Minnesota Dakota District to check out the newspaper's reports that they had read about large Lutheran settlements in Saskatchewan, around the Langenberg area. Well, the mission board of our Minnesota Dakota District thought, well, it's about time. They still remember. Some of the members on the mission board had been there when they were sending men up in the earlier years in Oshawa. And it's been now 3 years since they've had anybody up in the Canadian West, and they thought it was about time to investigate what had been happening in this area. So they sent Brauer up. He came back with a report that there were many Lutherans in the area and that they should immediately send a full-time missionary to the area, preferably someone young and strong, and probably a candidate from the St. Louis Seminary. That was what his report stated. Well, when the general counsel heard that a Missouri man had been snooping around the settlements up there, then they became angry and upset. So they took quick action, and they sent another, besides Tempit now, this is another Mission House of Berlin candidate by the name of Emil Bertholdt, who sent to Langenberg. That's where Brauer had been. He'd been in Langenberg. Let's send someone there. And they posted a pastor there. In the next convention of the General Council, there was dismay expressed about the fact that the Missouri Synod was in the Canadian West, and they registered complaints about this. In fact, they really had the impression that Missouri had no business being in the whole Canadian West, and that the territory was theirs. So you can see the beginning of a conflict. It was really too large a territory for their four pastors to serve. To think that God had called the General Council to serve 235,000 square miles among four people, surely there would have been room for somebody else. Somebody else came in 1891 in the fall, Herman Beagle. Herman Beagle is our first resident pastor, and he serves in Winnipeg. His call had an interesting designation to it. Herman Beagle was called to be the missionary to Manitoba and all bordering territories. Which is very small, Simon. If you had that kind of a call coming in, he was a candidate from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, 22 years old, with a large territory to cover. The evening that he arrived in September, with him was Sherman Brower, the pastor who had come up the previous month before, and he installed him. They had a worship service that evening. A number of people had gathered, and all looked well until the next day when he met Ludwig Streit on the street, who told him to leave Winnipeg in the Canadian West, and that he had no business being there. Well, perhaps youth and ambition and the dedication moved Herman Beagle to stay in spite of Ludwig Streit's objections. And the following Sunday, he had a worship service at the local German Baptist Church. There were well over 100 people who were there. There were an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 Lutherans in the city of Winnipeg at this time alone. And there were only about 300 at Trinity. So there were about 1,700 Lutherans somewhere who could come to worship service, and they did. After that, then Beagle, 3 days later, went on his first missionary journey. He covered a wide territory. He went to areas that had not been served before, and in southwest Manitoba, and began very important work for the next couple of years. There is so much I could cover, and I see my time. I'm just going to maybe indicate a couple of key things that happen now. In the spring of the following year, a letter was sent to Beagle from Neudorf. There was trouble in the congregation there. The letter was misdirected. Canada Post is like that. In its earliest days, they delivered the letter intended for Beagle to Ludwig Streit, who noticed the address, but opened the letter and assumed it was for himself. There was trouble in Neudorf. So he got on the train, went to Neudorf himself, never delivered the letter to Beagle, and formed the congregation the following fall. That's the kind of fellow Streit was. Well, that was all right. Beagle had plenty to do. He didn't need that congregation in Neudorf. The next month, there was trouble in Langenberg. This is where the young man Bertholdt is, who had come from the Missionhof in Berlin. People were upset. Another letter to Beagle in Winnipeg. This letter gets through. It's delivered properly. They were bothered because Pastor Bertholdt had been claiming that it was all right to use apple slices instead of unleavened bread for Holy Communion. Apple strudel for communion. And the people were having fits about this, and they thought there must be better theology somewhere. And so they sent a letter to Beagle. Beagle opened the letter, looked at the contents, and said, yeah, maybe they're having some problems. So he went up, and he talked to the people. They were primarily in the Landeskirchen Hoffenthal area. And within a matter of days, much to the objections to Bertholdt, who had met him at the train, heard he was coming, and told me to get back on the train. Nevertheless, he talked to the people in the Landeskirchen area, and 148 members were the founding fathers of the congregations in Landeskirchen Hoffenthal. Finally, one other development I can mention. This Dunmore group went to Edmonton area, Stony Plains. This is a most fascinating story. Pastor Penpipe went up, followed the group. Actually, they went ahead of him. He was back east somewhere when they decided to go ahead up north. They had been, again, crop failure, drought problems with the growing season. They went to Stony Plain. He came up. Things went well for a couple of years. Until 1893, there was trouble over the land. Apparently, there had been a series of arrivals of immigrants in the area. They first started about northeast of Stony Plain. Many were moving into the west. He told them, Pastor Penbite told the group, we need to relocate the church, which was being held in his home, at Homestead, and to a more central location. Thereupon, a committee of 20 men went out to find land. They found a piece of land, more centrally located. They signed a contract for the land. The following Sunday, Penbite said from the pulpit that he had changed his mind. A day later, the people went to him and said, that can't be. We signed a major contract. Well, long and short of it is that within a few weeks, they couldn't give in. He wanted them to do so. They excommunicated. He excommunicated 20 families. He called them to a meeting and he said, are you willing to confess your sins of disobedience? And an old man stood up and said, I don't think so. And so these families were excommunicated with no one to help them. 5 months later, a man arrived by the name of Schwarzberger in the settlement. We know now he was a janitor. He had been a janitor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. But he said that he was sort of an assistant to Dr. Pieper and said that he was a pastor. So he began to read them sermons by Walther, but he fumbled over it so much that they began to notice that maybe he wasn't all he said he was. They found out that he was just a janitor. Well, the group now, this is a group from Austria-Hungary, and while they decided they'd have nothing to do with the Missouri Synod, they're excommunicated by the General Council. What did they have left? A few months later, one of the girls from their group became a maid for a household in Edmonton. She met up with a young man who had come from Elmira, Ontario, Aaron's old congregation. And he said to her, there are better Missouri Synodists. Believe me. So the 20 families sent a letter to Elmira, to the pastor Frost there. He took that letter and sent it to the Michigan district. That letter then went from the Michigan district to the Northwestern district, or Minnesota, Dakota now at this time. The president of the Minnesota district opened the letter and said, well, this really should be handled by F.H. Eggers, who's in Montana. So he sent the letter out to Montana. This took a few months, but by the time Eggers got the letter, he went up to the group in Stony Plain, and he sat, actually, in May of 1894, he was there through the evening till 6 in the morning, hearing these people out and their problems. They also wanted to know what was his stance on conversion, because they had heard stuff about the Missouri Synod predestination controversy, and they wanted to know about that. The next day, he went to see Pastor Penbite, who said, that group. Well, then he slammed the door on him, and he wouldn't talk with him about the situation. But just enough for Eggers to come to the conclusion that the group really had not been properly excommunicated. And in a matter of a few more days, St. Matthew's Lutheran Church, Stony Plain, our congregation, is begun there. The following fall, Emil Eberhard came as a candidate, one of the most promising candidates in St. Louis Seminary, to serve this group. I think of all the groups, it's the Stony Plain group that fascinates me the most, because Eberhard came there and served for the next 48 years. He just became a giant among pioneer missionaries. He served this whole area, eventually down Pincher Creek and the southwest area. He took the train and went and began a congregation in Vancouver. Eberhard was everything in the West for at least a few years until Ray Winkle congregation, which, if you need to go to class, I'll try to wrap this up right now. There's a footnote on this congregation in Stony Plain. During World War I, as you well probably can recall, there were a lot of problems in both the United States and Canada about parochial schools and German-speaking Lutherans. The Stony Plain group had their school closed down by the Department of Education of Alberta, and all schools were closed down. We were not allowed to function. 1921, after the war, they reopened. A few weeks later, an official of the Department of Education came to Stony Plain and said they couldn't continue, that the school was too inefficient. It was a real anti-German bias still after the war. They were so convinced that God was calling them to have a school and to continue the ministry as they had, that Eberhardt and two other men went to Mexico try to find a place to relocate the congregation. By the time they came back from Mexico saying they had a place down there, the Alberta government decided that they had a strength of conviction that wasn't going to be deterred, and that if they didn't give in, the whole community would pick up and leave. And so they gave in and allowed them to continue the school, and it's virtually the only school that continued from that time in Western Canada. So this group in Stony Plain is quite the group. Well, I could have mentioned with more time some of the vicissitudes, the difficulties the missionaries encountered, the bitter cold, minus 30 to 50 degree weather, terrible difficulties traveling, even being on schedule. The trains would stop to allow the crews to go out and shoot grouse and do some rabbit hunting. But these men of God worked very hard with a lot of dedication and opened up a ministry in the Canadian West. And I have to say that I hadn't realized the extent of their accomplishment over time. I mean, in the Canadian West, but I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for their efforts as they were inspired by God, trying to take the